Welcome to the Voting Rights Act 55th Anniversary Conference Call. My name is John. I'll be your operator for today's call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. During the question-and-answer session, if you do have a question, press star then one on your touchtone phone. Please note the conference is being recorded. And I will now turn the call over to Vanita Gupta.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining us today. I'm Vanita Gupta, President and CEO of the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights, a coalition of more than 220 national organizations working to build an America as good as its ideals. Our nation continues to mourn Congressman John Lewis's passing. Congressman Lewis, who helped lead the historic 1965 March for Voting Rights in Selma, Alabama, and worked across a movement that had gripped the nation. He sustained a cracked skull at the hands of state troopers on the Edmund Pettus Bridge and spent the next half century at the helm of the nation's fight for voting rights and equality. He embodied hope and would show up to do the hard work day in and day out, regardless of how uphill the struggle was. And if lawmakers are going to commemorate his life and legacy, they must act. No more laudatory statements about Congressman Lewis unless they are actively pushing for urgent election funding for the states, for democracy reform, for full restoration of the Voting Rights Act, and to make it as efficient as possible for people to vote amid a global pandemic. The battle for American democracy requires a new urgency as the nation grapples with a confluence of crises, from state violence against Black people and other communities of color to a global pandemic and a looming election in which a candidate has declared war on democracy. Given this country's history of erasure and denying marginalized people a voice, this moment calls for us to guard against any obstacles to prevent our communities from rightfully exercising the right to vote in the upcoming election. 55 years ago tomorrow, our nation made historic strides with one of the most laudable pieces of federal legislation in our nation's history, the passage of the Voting Rights Act, which sought to end racial discrimination at the ballot box. But in 2013, five justices of the Supreme Court ruled in Shelby County versus Holder to gut the VRA's most powerful provision, the Section 5 preclearance system. Section 5, which enabled the Department of Justice and federal courts to block proposed discriminatory voting restrictions in jurisdictions with the most pervasive histories of racial discrimination. In the absence of the federal oversight of the Voting Rights Act that the Voting Rights Act once provided, some states have weaponized the law to hack away at voting rights. Since the Shelby County decision, 25 states have imposed new restrictions on voting, from enacting restrictive voter ID laws to cutting back early voting hours. I was proud to testify in support of H.R. 4 in 2019, the Voting Rights Advancement Act, led by Congresswoman Terry Sewell, who is on this call today, and then to stand next to her and Congressman Lewis at the press conference in December of 2019, to celebrate its passage. It is now sitting and languishing in Senator Mitch McConnell's legislative graveyard, but the leadership conference will continue every day to work to see that bill become law and will not rest until it does. We have another immediate crisis on our hands. Some policymakers right now are leveraging the pandemic to make it even harder to vote. And with 90 days until the general election, states are falling far short of fulfilling their obligation to ensure that every voter can safely cast a ballot that counts. Scenes from primaries in states like Wisconsin, Georgia, Kentucky, and Pennsylvania were chaos. Some polling places didn't adhere to social distancing safety measures. Voters were confused about where to vote due to last-minute poll place consolidations. Some polling locations opened late, leaving voters waiting in long lines if they could afford to wait at all. And there continues to be discrediting of mail-in voting, using social media to spread misinformation and show discord and doubt about the integrity of our elections. Voters deserve better, and our democracy deserves better. It's why the Senate must immediately include $3.6 billion in the next COVID-19 package to ensure safeguards for our democracy during the pandemic and beyond. This is part of the mandate for ensuring voting rights in this country. And so we are pushing under Speaker Pelosi's leadership for advancing the House passage of the HEROES Act into the Senate and to have the Senate actually act and ensure that there's adequate funding for states to prepare for this election amid a pandemic. And without a functional democracy in which everyone is included, heard, and represented, we cannot make real progress on civil and human rights issues that matter to all of us: healthcare, fair wages, educational equity, justice reform, to name a few. But our voices have power and our movement is strong and our vote matters. So thank you. Thank you for all joining to commemorate this very important anniversary, but also to recommit to the work that we have ahead. So now I want to pass it to Congresswoman Terry Sewell, who has been every year leading the charge to restore the Voting Rights Act and to push for voting rights around the country. Congresswoman Sewell.
Thank you so much, Vanita. I want to thank the Leadership Conference for all that you do to advance voting rights across this nation. It would be impossible to celebrate the 55th anniversary of the passage of the Voting Rights Act of 1965 without acknowledging, as you have, the passing of our dear friend, my colleague, my hero, John Lewis. John was instrumental in getting the Voting Rights Act across the finish line. As he often would say, he gave a little blood on a bridge in my hometown of Selma to ensure that all Americans have the right to vote. As we reflect upon the unparalleled legacy and life work of John Lewis, we must also redouble our efforts to fight for the cause he held nearest to his heart, the cause of marched so that he fought and marched for and risked his life for, which is voting rights. John understood that progress is elusive, that old battles have become new again since the Shelby versus Holder decision, and that each generation must fight and fight again for equality and the realization of those sacred rights enshrined in our Constitution. Since 2013 and the Shelby versus Holder decision, I have had the honor of spearheading and being the lead sponsor of the seminal piece of legislation that would fully restore the Voting Rights Act of 1914. That's in three successive Congresses, I have filed the bill. But it wasn't until 2018 when we as a nation rose up and elected a House Democratic majority to Congress that we finally had a chance. So in December of 2019, H.R. 4, the Voting Rights Advancement Act, was finally passed out of the House of Representatives, but it sits languishing on Mitch McConnell's desk along with 275 other bills that have bipartisan support. As we think about tomorrow being the 55th anniversary of the Voting Rights Act of 1965, nothing would be more paramount, especially given this pandemic and the ensuing and upcoming presidential election, than we fully restore the protections of the Voting Rights Act. The VRAA was renamed properly just last week. It's now, H.R. 4 is now the John Lewis Voting Rights Act of 2020. What a befitting name. I know that nothing would bring John greater joy than knowing that this vital piece of legislation has passed and that his tireless life's work fighting to increase voting rights and access to the ballot box was not in vain. But the reality is that we have not yet achieved the America that John dreamed of. The Supreme Court in the Holder decision, in the Shelby decision, gutted the enforceability of the Voting Rights Act. And without federal protections against discrimination, states across this nation have enacted new voter suppression and intimidation tactics. In fact, we currently have a president who openly rails against mail-in voting in the midst of a pandemic, no less. We have state legislatures that are working hard to make it difficult for Americans to vote by reducing polling places and polling hours. And we have secretaries of states actively purging voter rolls. Not only should Mitch McConnell take up and pass the John Robert Lewis Voting Rights Act of 2020, which has been sitting on his desk since December 2019, he should also support the Vote Safe Act that requires states to permit no excuse mail-in absentee voting for the 2020 election and early in-person voting periods of at least 20 days for the 2020. Ensuring fair and free elections is a cornerstone of our democracy, and right now too many Americans are being left behind. I'm honored to join with the Leadership Conference and all activists in trying to ensure that every American has access to the ballot box. John has given us a roadmap. He has told us time and time again. He was consistent in his remarks, in every speech, in every video, in every remark. He said, never give up, never give in. He reminded us that voting and the vote is the most powerful nonviolent tool in our democracy. He has sowed seeds of hope and inspiration in all of us, and we must rise up and pick up the baton and carry on that march. We must recommit ourselves to John Lewis' vision of America and restore the promise of voter equality. It's an honor to be with you tonight, today, and it's an honor also to pass the baton to the Secretary of State of California, Alex Padilla.
Thank you, Representative Sewell. Hello, everybody. Thank you for joining us. I want to thank the Leadership Conference for convening us. My name is Alex Padilla. I serve as a California Secretary of State and concur with the prior speakers that the fight for voting rights is not just a historic fight, but it is a contemporary fight, a fight that we continue to engage in every single day and in every single election. You know, ensuring that our elections are equally accessible and secure is a tough enough fight every election cycle. But in 2020, we're gearing up for a general election during a global health pandemic. So ensuring that we protect voting rights and public health simultaneously is even a bigger challenge. So I want to share what we are doing in California to prepare, because I do believe it is a model for the rest of the nation. You know, the probably arguably no safer and more convenient way to vote than from the comfort and safety of your own home. So in California, we will be mailing voters their ballots. Every registered voter will receive their ballot in the mail in advance of the November election and have multiple options for how to return the ballot through the Postal Service. And yes, California is one of the states that covers the return postage, so folks don't have to scramble for stamps. Counties will be installing drop boxes throughout the county, so any voter can deliver their ballot to a secure drop box in the weeks leading up to the election. Or people can drop it off in person if they so choose, because this is not an all vote by mail only election. We know that there's a lot of voters who need an in-person option, whether it be for an accessibility issue or language assistance or replacement ballots or participate in same-day registration. And so we're simultaneously working hard to provide as many safe in-person opportunities to vote both on and before Election Day. The philosophy is simple. More people we can encourage to vote early, whether it is by mail or safely in person, means shorter lines and smaller crowds on Election Day. You know, we saw the experience in a number of states in their primaries, you know, Wisconsin and Georgia, just two of the most glaring examples. The lines, the public health risk and exposure should be a warning to the nation, not a preview of what will happen in November. But thankfully, we know what to do. Elections officials throughout the country know that expanding vote by mail, expanding in-person opportunities to vote, and implementing public health safeguards, PPE, physical distancing, and more in voting locations is what we need to do to ensure that the voters of America do not have to make the false choice between exercising their right to vote and protecting their health and that of their loved ones. But to implement these measures, we need the resources to do so. COVID-19 has not just had a devastating impact on the health of Americans, but it's had a devastating economic impact too, including to state and local government budgets. So we line up, I proudly line up with all the voices on this call demanding Congress take action, and more specifically that the United States Senate pass the $3.6 billion already approved by the House of Representatives to let elections officials to provide us the resources we need to implement the measures that the voters of the United States of America deserve. And so with that, let me now introduce the next speaker, President and CEO of the NAACP, Mr. Derek Johnson.
Yeah. Thank you, and I want to thank Benita and Alexis for organizing this important call. The NAACP, for me personally, know all too well the importance of the Voting Rights Act and the need for reauthorization. As a resident of Mississippi, I can tell you firsthand the impact of the act has had to make progress in the state and the tremendous setback when the Supreme Court decided to remove Section 5, the preclearance provision. The preclearance provision required jurisdictions before they made any changes to have those changes pre-cleared by the Department of Justice. Those changes included procedures, policies, or any other thing that could disrupt the normal flowing of an election cycle. That becomes really important when you are talking about the locations of precincts without providing timely notifications, or when you're talking about whether or not some precincts will have the type of technology available or unbeknownst to voters, machines are delivered and they're not properly provided with the charging cords. We all seen the horrific pictures in Wisconsin and how individuals were standing in long lines. We are afraid that this election cycle, particularly in formerly covered jurisdictions and probably in other jurisdictions, we will see a drastic change in how the administration of elections are carried out if this act isn't reauthorized, or better yet, we must reauthorize this act and advance more reforms to ensure our democracy is intact. We are all witnessing on the news over the last several days the deliberate attack on the security of our elections by this administration. It is something that any democracy, if put in this posture, will be put at threat. As African Americans across the southern landscape, as African Americans across the country, we believe in this country, but this country must protect our election systems so it can truly be a democracy. We are facing the tragic possibility that many groups from across the country will be seeking to suppress the African American vote. We've heard reports that the Republican National Convention, a committee, will be seeking to enforce a program that would intimidate voters. We know what has happened in several primaries, including in Louisville, Kentucky, where thousands of individuals were expected to vote at one polling location. We've seen from past history that voters are being have been provided with bad information and misdirections. All of these things could be prevented if the preclearance provision was back in force. It is something that's extremely important. It is something that we all think should be in place because it is the most democratic thing to do, and no one can call themselves a patriot and at the same time undermine the ability for elections to be carried out or access to voting. So the NAACP continues to call on Congress to reauthorize the Voting Rights Act to ensure that democracy works for all citizens in this country and to ensure that we once again become the beacon of what a democratic society should be, a society where individuals are provided unfettered access to the ballot box so their voices can be heard in this country. Thank you, Vanita and Leisha Conference, for putting it together, and we look forward to answering any questions.
Thank you, Derek. Really appreciate it. And now I want to pass it to Maria Towns, President and CEO of the American Association of People with Disabilities.
Thank you very much, Vanita, and thank you to the Leadership Conference for organizing this important call. 55 years after the passage of the Voting Rights Act and 30 years after the passage of the Americans with Disabilities Act, more than 65% of polling places present barriers to disabled people that work to suppress the power of the disability vote. From a lack of physical accessibility to inoperable accessible voting machines to discriminatory voter ID laws or a lack of language access. I also want to point out the disability community is dynamic and diverse, with disability occurring at higher rates in communities of color and communities living in poverty. So when we discuss reports of disability voter suppression, we're talking about Black and brown disabled people and those living in some of the areas where their vote is the most valuable thing that they have. Over the past 10 years, reports of voter suppression towards disabled people have grown. We've heard about polling places moving unexpectedly, and someone's not able to reschedule their paratransit trip, so they're not able to vote at all. Since the onset of the coronavirus pandemic, many disabled people, a population at high risk for COVID, a population who has already seen tens of thousands of our brothers and sisters die over the past 5 months, we are faced with an impossible decision, a decision where we're forced to choose between protecting our health and in some ways our lives and participating in our democracy. While vote by mail will resolve some of these concerns, it is not a complete solution. Vote by mail is not accessible to many people with disabilities, such as those who are blind or who have print disabilities. We must restore the Voting Rights Act, and states must receive funding in the next COVID relief package to execute vote-by-mail programs that are as accessible as possible and also expand and make their in-person voting safe and accessible. 55 years is already too long to wait, and we have an urgent need to make sure that our democracy is accessible to all, as is the promise of the United States itself. It is now my privilege to introduce Helen Butler, Executive Director of the Georgia Coalition for the People's Agenda.
Thank you, and thank you to the Leadership Conference for having us as a part of this to highlight what has happened in Georgia. Our organization, the Georgia Coalition for the People's Agenda, was founded by one of the civil rights leaders who fought for voting rights, the late Dr. Joseph Eccles Lowry. And June 9th, our primary, Georgia was the epitome of what could go wrong with elections in a pandemic while using new voting equipment. We saw long lines. We saw closing and consolidation of polling locations. Not enough poll workers that were not properly trained. We saw equipment like scanners not working properly, voting machines, new equipment not functioning properly, absentee ballots not received timely, applications never processed as they were left in the atmosphere somewhere because they couldn't be processed via email. We saw facilities that couldn't accommodate safe distancing for poll workers and voters. We saw that these polling locations were not sufficient for a pandemic and were potentially exposing voters and our election officials to COVID-19. Despite this, though, this chaos, we did have some bright sides. The bright side, most of all, that we had the largest increase in turnout for our primary ever because voters were committed that they were not going to let their power be taken away by these actions of not having proper elections administered during a pandemic. We also saw that we had the introduction of drop boxes that alleviated some of the problems with the vote-by-mail process. But despite this, despite all of this, it was not enough, and voters had to endure long lines in the heat, in the rain, but they were determined, and we applaud them for that. That's why it's evidenced by these many problems that with vote by mail, lack of poll workers, insufficient polling locations, equipment problems, and long lines, it is imperative that Congress provide funding for elections in November so that both voters and election officials have sufficient personal protective equipment and voting can be conducted in a safe, accessible, and secure manner. It's critical that we have funding for drop boxes in all locations, recruitment of poll workers that are properly trained, scanners and other voting equipment that can handle large numbers of paper ballots, postage for vote-by-mail ballots, increased funding for the Postal Service to deliver voters' ballots in a timely manner, and of course, we must have funding for security of our voting systems. It is critical that we, Congress, act, and they act today. And as a member of my local Board of Election in Morton County, we're calling upon our congressional people to do the right thing and pass funding for safe and secure elections. Thank you.
Thank you so much. We're open for any questions.
Thank you. Now begin the question and answer session. If you do have a question, press star then one on your touch tone phone. Once again, that's star then one on your touch tone phone. And I am showing no questions at this time.
Okay, well, thank you all for joining and really appreciate it. And tomorrow we will commemorate the 55th anniversary of the Voting Rights Act, even as we fight in present time in Congress to ensure that we've got the adequate funding in the states to ensure a safe, fair, and accessible election come November. Thank you all for joining. Thank you.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you, everybody.
That concludes today's conference.
Thanks.
Thank you for participating, and you may now disconnect.